I joined the BB at the age of 13 when Steadfast magazine was an eagerly awaited monthly publication. In the April 1962 edition, I saw an advert for the Glen Almond 80th anniversary celebration camp, but I was disappointed that one had to be 15 by the date of the start of the camp in August 63, and I wasn't 15 until September. However, a couple of weeks before the camp, a boy in a nearby company had to go into hospital and so was not able to attend. As there were no other boys in that company able to go, his captain got in touch with mine to see if there's anybody in our company. I was the only possible, and Skip made inquiries to see if I would be able to go as a last minute substitute. Fortunately for me, that was agreed. Fortunately also, I had made some notes at the time of the camp and shortly afterwards, and that's helping me with the details of these memories. After hurried preparations, I found myself with John, Colin and Ted, the three other lads from my company, on Birmingham New Street Station, ready to catch the overnight train to Perth. I don't think I slept much on that train. But when we got to Perth just before 10 in the morning, we dumped our luggage on a porter's trolley, which would take it to the coach for the final stage of the journey to Trinity College, Glen Almond. On arrival, I was split from John, Colin and Ted, as they were in company two and I was in company four, along with the other lad from our nearby company and four lads from Peterborough and Galla Shields. Just my luck, my company was the farthest from all the coaches' unloading point. On my way to company four, I had to bus the flags of all the nations represented at the camp. I handed in my medical slip at the check-in and made my way into line C, tent six, where I met the other five inhabitants of tent 4C6. Meals were served in the marquee, which by the end of the week was extremely muddy, so wellies were certainly the order of the day. The remainder of the arrival afternoon, I spent dozing off and writing letters and postcards. Everyone was back in camp by 5:30 for high tea, after which, if wanted, we could visit the camp cinema in a small marquee from 6:30 to about 8 each evening. The official opening of the camp took place after retreat at 9 o'clock on the Wednesday in a huge marquee, a 200 foot by 40 foot tent, at which the camp commandant, Sir John Hunt, gave an address of welcome to everyone. Messages of goodwill were read out from the foreign visitors, after which we had a sing-along from the Daily Mail songbook. Evening prayers were normally held in the camp marquee at 9:45, after which each company dispersed to its own marquee for supper at 10. Lights out came at 11. Most nights at about 7 o'clock, one of the companies or another would give a concert in the main marquee to those who wanted to attend. Reveille each day was at 7:30, and the first day dawned a fine day, though plenty of rain came later. Our company had what were known as mickle sports that morning, which were things such as golf, rifle shooting and murder ball, and in the afternoon, muckle sports, such as rugby, football and cricket. On the Thursday evening, we all got together outside the large marquee to rehearse for the BBC programme Songs of Praise for television and Sunday Half Hour for the radio. I was the cheeky one who went up to the cameraman and asked if it would be possible for me to have the scroll of credits which had been rolled up for the television programme, which of course was going to be no use to the BBC after that. I was lucky and he gave it to me. I kept it for some 30 years before passing it on to the BB archives where it now resides. Three events of the week I can remember quite well. The first was an excursion to Loch Lomond, a round trip of some 160 miles. My group did the tour going via Creef, Lochearn Head and Crianlarich to Tarbert, where we boarded the paddle steamer Maid of the Loch to sail southwards down the loch to Ballock, returning to Glenalmond via Aberfoyle and the Trossachs. The other group made the trip in the reverse direction. On the 19th of August, the whole camp went by coach to Edinburgh, where several ideas had been suggested to us to interest us during the 4 hours we had for sightseeing. Amongst the other things, I climbed all 287 steps to the top of the Scott Monument. At 7 o'clock, we were all at the Corn Market for the reception given by the Lord Provost of the City of Edinburgh. And by 8:45, we were seated on Castle Esplanade for the 1963 Edinburgh Military Tattoo. On this occasion, I think lights out was well after 11 p.m. The final memory I want to relate is one which I can probably do safely now at almost 60 years distance, as the driver involved in this incident departed this life many years ago. We were on expedition in the hills along deserted narrow roads, and there were two incidents on that expedition I remember. First, one of the young Swedish officers decided he wanted to go swimming in one of the remarkably chilly pools, and he did so. The first instance I'd ever come across of skinny dipping. None of the rest of us decided to join in. And secondly, the driver concerned had a quite large estate car. The inside was absolutely packed with lads, but there was still not room for two of us. So one other boy and myself were invited to ride on his roof rack. That was great fun. Obviously before health and safety had been invented. But I think that even in 1963, if one of the Scottish boys in blue had seen it, there would have been trouble.